This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
First of all, Siberia is huge. Of course, it's very cold in the winter.
The awesomeness of our existence.
And also getting lost in the cornfields.
But you can survive in the winter. There's no other choice. I mean, you have to survive.
I'm crying. I'm scared. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I also feel like a very brave pioneer person who's taking risks.
That led me into the path that I said my husband wished I hadn't gone down.
Well, the wife I mentioned left probably 2 weeks after I got out of the hospital. She couldn't handle the changes.
But there's a rhythm to it, and I guess I more or less have found the rhythm over the years.
We kids, we didn't care if it was cold. We just would go outside and play and come home with completely frozen fingers and toes. But we just didn't care.
Welcome. And yes, this week from the steppes of Siberia, we're not on location, but in fact, it is getting a bit chilly here in Sebastopol, California.
This is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. And Hitchhiking is a show about journeys. And we've lived in California now a little over 3 years, migrating from Philadelphia and Midwesterners back in the distant past. And man, this is a place for stories about journeys.
Is it ever? You know, I read that over half the state's population right now was born out of state. Yeah, that's the history. So there are a lot of people, even homegrown Californians, in that mind-bending experience of reinventing ourselves whether we want to or not.
This week, it's just one story, but three people. And it's not really about any of those major contributions of California to American culture, radical politics, smog, home computers, gay county commissioners, but just some very simple personal searches for identity and for place.
Three women, Dina, Galina, Demira.
Sometimes a strange thing happens with interviews. People who've never met one another start conversing in your head, sometimes about similar experiences, but sometimes it takes a while to think, well, what is the commonality? So we thought, what if we do take three people whom we've interviewed separately and put them together and imagine that elliptical conversation? Let's try it.
Yes, I was born and I grew up in Siberia. It was a modern city, but I remember between the apartment buildings, there was pieces of forest. I mean, we would just disappear in those islands of forest and would play and just pretend that we are Indians. Somehow, we had such a strong connection with Indians.
Okay, I grew up in L.A., and my parents are sort of an interracial couple. My mother is American Indian. She's a mixed blood Native American. My father was first generation Sicilian, and my mom was first generation off the res.
Well, I was born in Houston, and at the age of five, my family found themselves in a cult. And of course, it wasn't thought of as a cult at the time, but there was a man who was a psychologist. This man gathered a bunch of people around him. We moved from the Texas area up to Columbus, Ohio. Went back down to Texas. My mom and dad separated.
Of course, it was a trip to the Lake Baikal. And when the first time I saw the lake, I remembered all the legends my grandmother used to tell me. And again, it was very magical. Because the water, the mountains, the water is so clear.
But I grew up with the Italian part of my family. The Native American part of my family were all scattered. My mother became an alcoholic.
You know, every family has a particular program for the children. So my mom expected me to be an engineer, and so I became an engineer, and I got married, two children were born, so it was kind of a planned life.
Yeah, I went to 20 different schools from kindergarten through 12th grade, and I didn't really know what it was like to have a friend. And I think about that as an adult, you know, it's still it's real common for me, for people to fall out of my life, you know, for them not to continue in my life.
So I was born this mixed blood Native American living in a Chicano area, but not really sure where I fit in and feeling really different and not really sure why. And it took me years until I was probably in my 30s. It started when I was at the end of my second marriage, where I had to start looking at why my life had gotten to where it was.
Looking back, I realized that probably at that time I started to use my intuitive mind instead of my logical mind.
I had to confront the question of who my ancestors were, basically.
I was in Mendocino County having a real hard time of it, making a living. So periodically I would sort of fall into a slough of despond.
I realized that we had to leave the country. And it wasn't a very easy decision for me because I was a patriot of my country, and I used to tell my ex-husband that I would never leave Russia because I love Russia so much. But again, at that time, my intuitive mind was saying, you have to go. You can't stay. I miss people, especially Siberian people. People connect through, not through mind, but through heart. Sometimes in the service they might be tough and rough and even not polite, but deep in their hearts, they're always a place to welcome you and to help you and to give you a shelter, to give you food. So anyway, we were allowed to come to the United States, and we went to Minnesota first because my ex-husband was promised a position. There was a lot of coldness and isolation. So I just felt like everyone was inside of a cocoon. And outside there was just this smile, which didn't mean anything. And I remember my first job was in McDonald's. In the first morning when I came to work and I was standing at the kitchen, one guy came over. He said, how are you doing? And I started to look what I was doing. I was doing nothing. And I didn't know how to answer his question. And I started to toss the muffins. And I said, I'm doing good. But when I turned around, he wasn't there. So he actually didn't care how I was doing. Because in Russia, if somebody would ask you, how are you doing? How are you? So you tell honestly how are you doing, that, oh, I'm doing not good, and this what happened, and that person would be listening to you. It would be a lot of compassion, and you will be giving advices, and so there would be an immediate counseling service for you. So this is and it was completely different here. Everyone goes to a counselor somewhere outside. Otherwise, everyone is okay.
And I had a friend, a male friend, who would watch me go through these. And at some point in time, I heard myself say to him, I don't even belong in this culture. I'm not of this culture. And he looked at me and he said, well, then go away. And I blinked and I said, well, what do you mean? I felt like somebody had hit me between the eyes with a rubber dart. Thunk. And let's see. I was actually in a car on my way to the Bay Area to perform. So I told him, you know, I'm going to check out for a while. And I didn't go to sleep, but I saw myself and a large group of women, and we were walking together in silence, sort of like processional, across a very red desert. And in the distance was this really huge, round, reddish monolith. It wasn't a building, it was some kind of a rock formation. I mean, it was way in the distance, but it was huge. We were sitting at the base of this monolith, and there was a big fire in the center. This elder woman danced over in front of me, and she made this gesture. It wasn't simply offering. It was more like, take this, you know. A few months later, my daughter and I were in a bookstore, and all of a sudden, she said, Mom, come here, look at this. This is really great. And we're flipping through it. And all of a sudden, she turned the page, and I just felt this, like somebody reached in and grabbed me right in my solar plexus. Not any pain, but just like, it was the monolith. The red monolith in the red desert.
I had to understand how alcoholism and the fact that I am an adult child of an alcoholic, how did that affect who I am and where my life had come to? So in order for me to understand that, what I had to do was go back to the reservation where my mother was from, where I still had relatives. So it was like a vision quest in a way. I had quit my job. I had been a dental assistant for many years. I was at the end of this marriage. I was in therapy. I was really stressed out. So I called my uncle. I had the 75-year-old uncle that I hadn't seen since I was 12 years old. And I said, hi, this is your niece, Dina. And I'm coming to Washington. Can I come visit you? And he said, sure, come on up. You can stay with me. And I said, okay, great. So I went up there and I spent a week with him. And he drove me all around the reservation. And he told me a lot of stories that I had never heard before, the stories of the boarding school system. I didn't even know about it at that time, about the boarding school system. But he told me that the children were taken out of their homes and they were sent to schools hundreds of miles away. And it was like a prison school. They wore uniforms. They were forbidden to speak the language. You know, what they did was if you did something that was against the rules, they lined all the kids up and in two rows facing each other, and they were all given straps, and you ran through this queue, and they all hit you with these straps. It was I couldn't believe that. I mean, I couldn't believe that that's what it was, that really happened. I had this naive notion that because I was sort of the prodigal daughter returning to the homeland, I thought I would be really well received, but I wasn't. I was by my uncle, who was happy to see me, and my other uncle who was there. But what I found was that I was an outsider, and I was greeted with a lot of suspicion, sometimes flat-out rudeness. Now, looking back, I understand it, but it was still painful. But it really was, as painful as it was like going home. I just knew it was like the time when I was a kid, when I went there, and I felt such a deep emotional response to it that I just knew that I was home on some really deep genetic level. I could plug into many lifetimes of being there.
But my ex-husband, unfortunately, he just missed the moment when I started to change, and he didn't follow me. I think I already had this in me. In the spring, in Siberia, there's still snow, a lot of snow, still cold. But if you will stay quietly and listen, you might start hearing that there's some movement underneath the snow. And every day that stream, that flow is stronger and stronger. The ice just breaks and that stream is out and it's powerful and there's no way to stop it. And everything is changing. The spring is there. So this is what happened to me.
So I came back from that trip and my life just continued to change dramatically.
Again, shamanism is so close to me, so natural, because I grew up in that environment.
That was one of the reasons that I knew that I was supposed to go there, is there was some connection with Aboriginal peoples that I was supposed to make. And I kind of thought I was going to be making some kind of an exchange and receiving some kind of training. And I felt, quote, let down. I didn't necessarily feel like I was really able to make a connection with the rock. I mean, largely when I was there, I mean, it wasn't totally mundane, but I lived. You know, many people, when I came back, they said, did you find what you were looking for? And stuff like that. I was like, well, I wasn't looking for anything. I felt like I got a call, and it wasn't a phone call, and I showed up. And then I sat there going, okay, what? I was not ever able to come home. In my coming back, I landed in a different community without a place to live, in culture shock, in grief, and in menopause.
I was doing beadwork. I was learning how to work with leather. I got involved in political issues with regard to Native American issues, and met somebody. He was a leather worker, and he was the first person I think I had ever met that really encouraged me to be who I was as an artist. And at the end of 6 months, we had this room full of these incredible, beautiful beaded leather buckskin bags. So we went all the way up through Washington and Oregon and into Canada, living in this RV and selling our work. And after a couple of years, we split up. Not much longer after that, I had a baby. Wasn't with him, it was somebody else. And I quit. I was heartbroken. I was devastated. I didn't think I could do it by myself. So I just stayed home, and I was a mom. I had a new life. I focused on being a parent for the first 2 years. And after 2 years, I was ready to do something different. So I got out the beads, bought some leather, and started working. And I was doing it by myself. I was doing everything, and it was going to a whole new level, and it was beautiful. The way that I look at my life now is that I'm following the lead of spirit. You know, for me, it's about following my dreams, my actual physical nighttime dreams. I've learned to trust them and rely on them, but that this shift in consciousness happened, it did take time. Even now, I see people that I haven't seen in 20 years, and I have to explain to them what has occurred in my life, you know, over these years that has led me to where I'm at now as a Native American artist. Because if they had known me 20 years ago, I was a dental assistant living in Hawaii being a surf bum.
The next morning, I woke up and I was ready to go and perform my shamanic ceremony. So I took off and I was driving on the road. And suddenly I saw a sign, Russian Lake. And it came to me strongly, yes, this is where I was supposed to go. And in order to get to the Russian Lake, I had to drive up the mountain 10 miles. And then it started to get more and more icy, and there was more and more snow. So I was able to drive for 8 miles, and then I realized it's too dangerous to drive any higher. So, but when I reared back and tried to move forward, when I pushed the pedal, the wheels, they were just spinning. So I was not moving. And I freaked out. I completely freaked out the first moment. I realized that I'm in a wilderness, and the last car what, which was driving there probably driven there maybe a week ago. So nobody would be looking for me because nobody knows where I went, and I'm on my own. And at one moment, I thought, only a spirit can help me. And in about 30 minutes, I heard a sound of a truck. There was a big truck approaching my place, and there was an old man sitting in a truck with beautiful white mustaches. And he said, "There's my son following me. He can help you." So when my car was pulled out of the trap, I asked them to give me a ride to the summit. And on the way to the summit, his son Dan told me a story. He said, "Galina, we are going from Reading. And we usually, at this time, we usually go to the mountains to pick up some Christmas trees. And suddenly, at one point, he changed the direction. And I tried to stop him. I was honking and flashing, and finally my father pulled over and I approached him and I said, 'Dad, where are you going?' And he said, 'Son, I don't know. I don't know why I'm going this way, but I feel that I have to go this way.' And my dad, he's a Native American. He trusts his intuition. You send the message, and he received the message. And the next day, I performed my shamanic ceremony."
I keep thinking my next journey, well, it could be a number of things. I have a vision that there is a place that's home, and then it's very possible or probable. In fact, I'm interested in continuing a life whereby certain periods of the year or times, and I don't mean periods like seasons, but that my work life would take me to another culture and I would be there for a period of time and then come back to that place that would be my home.
You know, I definitely can understand what people can think about my experiences. And might say, "Oh, she's a nuts." So what I want to tell those people who have a very strong logical mind, that you don't have to believe in everything what I'm telling. You have to experience it. And everyone is able to experience it. So instead of pushing away those subtle feelings, sensations, and visions, pay attention. Pay attention and see what is going to happen next.
Well, by the time I got pregnant, I was 36, and I had pretty much given up on the idea that I was going to have any kids. Again, I was having it in my dreams and experiences, and I knew that there was this little soul that was wanting to come in. So I got pregnant. I mean, I knew that the next time we made love, I would get pregnant, and I did. And it just was like obvious that this was the next phase in life. As scary as it was, I greeted it with open arms, and it certainly provided me with the stability that I had never had before. I mean, if I didn't have a kid, I'd still be floating around the country, you know, aimlessly maybe, not knowing where to go next or what to do. But now, having a child gives you focus.
Galina Vladi has been working with Siberian shamans and is writing a book near Lake Tahoe. Dina Onehart lives in Santa Rosa with her son, in between traveling to craft fairs. And Amira has moved to Denver.
Boy, Australians.
We did have some problems. We had to rebuild the carburetor in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
All these little magics, they just kept happening.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Next show, a magical journey Is it a bus or the chariot of the sun?
And a mother waits anxiously to see what her daughter is getting pierced next.
Hitchhiking is a production of The Independent Eye. Music and engineering by Elizabeth Fuller. Interviews and lighting design by Conrad Bishop. We're supported in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and by the Hitchhikers Guild. Visit our website for more information or for listening to past shows. You can sit right there at your computer and listen to a show through your tinny little speaker. Or, no, if you have big, wonderful, heaving things pulsing out of the wall, that's cool too. Or you can order real high-quality CDs of anything you hear. They make wonderful gifts for your less predictable friends. That's www.independenteye.org.
Do think about sending us an email of response. It's really cool. Actually, people have been starting to do that, and sometimes it even leads to stories and so on. But it's great to know what it is that really rang your bell about what you heard, and then tell us what you'd like to hear.
And a travel thought for the week from Michael Moncour's Guide to Quotations. As you journey through life, take a minute every now and then to give a thought for the other fellow. He could be plotting something. That's from Hagar the Horrible.
Peace and joy.
In Mexico, it's against the rules, sort of socially, to say, I don't know. So often people who didn't know where such and such was would say, a la izquierda y a la cocina, allí, you know, and that we would end up being on some wild goose chase, and it was interesting and funny. I just start laughing at the absurdity of it all. I mean, what's lost anyway? But I know I've been lost, but I don't think of times like that. I think of times more feeling lost inside myself.